allegiance to the flag. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You all have a copy of the published agenda. Other than deleting the approval of the minutes, any other changes?
Yes, we do have a couple of grant requests, number 3 and 4. We'd like to defer on or like to remove from the agenda. One is Mount Zion Church and the other is Morning Star Publications.
Any other corrections or additions?
Unfortunately, we have to delete the minutes
one more week,
please.
Okay.
Where's Gag?
I'll catch up.
We can handle that. Okay.
I
need a motion to approve the amended agenda with the deletion of the minutes and grant request 3 and 4.
Make a motion we approve the agenda for Sussex County Council October 2nd, 2007 as in printed form with the deletion of the minutes and item 3 and 4 under grant requests.
So moved.
I have a motion, Mr. Rogers, second Mr. Jones, to approve the amended agenda. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Correspondence, Mr. Griffin.
Several items this morning. First, a letter from Ruth Abbott, chairperson of the Chamber of Commerce of Greater Milford, thanking council for a grant that they received to use for their Freedom Festival. Thank you card from the Woodland Ferry Association and the support you gave them for their 15th annual Woodland Festival. Thank you note from the Arabian Lights Dance Company thanking you for a donation that you gave to that organization. A letter from DJ Hughes, manager of the American Legion Post 8 baseball team in the Milton area, thanking council for a donation that they used to purchase equipment for their players. Thank you note from the Boys and Girls Clubs of Delaware, the Georgetown chapter, thanking council for a donation that they are using for their program. It looks like a certificate of thanks from the token of thanks for helping make Greenwood's first annual Big Third Saturday a success. A letter from the City of Seaford Recreation Department thanking council for a donation to their youth football team. Letter from the Ronald McDonald House thanking council for a grant that they used to offset the cost of housing families from Sussex County. And a letter from the Chief of Police of the City of Seaford expressing appreciation for the donation to their police department's community night out. That's all the correspondence, unless someone has something they'd like to pass down.
Any other correspondence? No, go to Mr. Baker.
Hey, good morning. The first item of business is announcing our new our third employee of the quarter. And with us today is Ms. Susan Wise. And I don't know if she'd like to come up to the podium here. Susan's been a big help in filling in with all the changes in her department. She answers calls and information requests from businesses that call requesting information about Sussex County. She helps with special events such as most recently NASCAR hospitality out at the airport. Been a great help there. She also helps with Carolyn on the circle and helps put together information for the county profile, which is in the works. And she was nominated by her boss, Jim Hicken. And Jim was quoted as saying, "I believe Susan goes above and beyond the duties of her job description." And she was nominated and picked by a committee that picks the employees at a quarter. So we have a tribute. Be it hereby known to all that the Sussex County Council commends Susan Wise, Sussex County Employee of the Quarter, third quarter 2007. The Sussex County Council extends its thanks and congratulations and directs this tribute to be presented to Susan Wise on the second day of October.
So moved.
Second. I have a motion, Mr. Jones, second Mr. Phillips, to approve the tribute to Susan Wise. Just read Mr. Baker. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried. Susan, would you like to tell us why that you are so deserving of this?
Just for all the reasons Dave Baker went and read off.
Good answer. You know?
You got the biggest offer in the county, I would think, now. Huh?
Yeah. I'm telling you. I do.
Says that about everybody, though. That gets up there.
No, I do want to thank Jim for nominating me. I mean, we've had quite a transition in our office, and we're working together as a team to continue to improve the airport.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to give you that tribute. And also a clock so you can know when to get to work and when to go home. And it's engraved on it, employee of the third quarter, Susan Wise.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the council, we want to thank you.
Thank you.
Who gets the parking spot?
Yeah, she doesn't need it. She ought to be able to auction that bad boy off now. Her make that. Oh, okay. I guess she'd be able to do that. Huh? Pass it down through generations.
The next item we have is a proposed ordinance for possible introduction today regarding the forested buffer definition. And as per the September 18th County Council discussion, this previously discussed draft ordinance has been revised to require a 30-foot forested buffer around all boundaries of a major residential subdivision, which would be a major subdivision would be four units or more. And if you'd like, I can highlight again the ordinance itself. Mr. Griffin drafted the ordinance. On the second page, it defines the buffer strip as a strip of land not less than 30 feet in width, exclusive of any residential lots, stormwater areas, open space, recreational amenities, etc., and located along the entire outer perimeter of any portion of a major subdivision of lands of four units or more, four lots or more. Designed and certified by licensed Delaware landscape architect, approved by the State Forester, TAC, and the Planning and Zoning Commission. The trees would be a combination of 70% deciduous shade trees and 30% evergreen. Every 100 foot of buffer would include a minimum of 20 trees. The deciduous trees would be a minimum width of 1.5 inches and height of 6 feet. Evergreen trees, minimum height of 5 feet when they're planted. The plan may include existing trees and of local species as long as they do provide a buffer that will filter views. The buffer will require a minimum of 4 inches of topsoil and grass, and wood chips could be substituted for the grass. And it must be installed, the buffer must be installed within 18 months from the date site work is authorized to commence. The developer would be responsible for maintaining the trees for a minimum of 2 years or until a later date when maintenance responsibilities would be transferred over to the Homeowners Association. And the Homeowners Association would be responsible for maintaining the buffer according to best management practices. The buffer would not be required along roads that enter into and out of the development connector roads, and it would also not be required along the width of stormwater outfall The landscape trees would, the plan would require avoid placing trees adjacent to entrances and exits that would restrict the view of motorists and provide a potential safety hazard. The 30-foot buffer, let's see, must be depicted on preliminary and final plot plans. And the conservation district must sign off on the final plot plan regarding the buffer, and the county bonds would cover forested buffer. And finally, the council could use this definition of a forested buffer when they approve a conditional use or change a zone. They could impose this as a condition if they would like. So,
okay.
I'll introduce it then, because we've talked about this for the last several weeks, so I'll go ahead and introduce it.
Okay. Thank you. So the next step, this ordinance would also needs to be reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission. So it would go to Planning and Zoning, and they will hold a public hearing, and then eventually, after that, the County Council will hold a public hearing. The next item we have is regarding special development districts and funding options. And last week, the County Council held a workshop regarding special development tax districts, and tax incremental financing, impact fees, and transportation districts. As discussed, in order to use special development tax districts, tax incremental financing, or impact fees, enabling legislation would be needed. The methods of financing infrastructure, such as roads, could be a valuable tool, or could be possible tools that could be used if the council elected to do so. If the council was inclined, Mr. Hal Sammons, the county's bond counsel, developed a resolution that I'll hand out that basically says that if you are in concurrence, that the county administration is hereby authorized and directed to proceed with drafting enabling legislation that would give the county council the power to create special development districts and to engage in special development district financings, to assess additional impact fees, and to create tax increment financing districts, and to engage in tax increment financings. So again, it covers special development districts, tax increment financing, and impact fees. If you were, and this would allow us to develop the legislation, which would be enabling legislation.
Which would we would review with them all each of those pieces of the legislation.
Right.
Would we introduce them all as a package? Is that the consensus here?
What's that?
The three pieces of the legislation they would develop from this. Would we just send that up to Dover all at one time? Or is it the intent consensus here just to pick the one they like? Or having, what could you give us an indication what some of you all think we ought to be doing from here on?
It's my understanding that the legislation you're going to draft is the enabling legislation. The specific legislation that would create parameters for the three options would come later. Is that correct?
Yes, it is enabling legislation. I'm sorry. It is enabling legislation. So if the county, if we did receive the ability to do this, right now we don't have the legal ability to sell bonds for a special development tax district or charge an impact fee or do tax incremental financing. So, but each time, in each case, like if we were selling bonds for a special development tax district, that would come before the council for your approval.
And this legislation would not be encumbered with heavy details and specifics on the ultimate legislation, correct?
Be just three generic type of, you're talking about three generic requests just to give us the ability to do it. Then we would have to recreate those ordinances again at our level. Is that what you're trying to make?
Yes. Okay, yeah, right. It would be general, and unless you wanted to put specifics in it at this time, but it would be general, give us the ability to do this.
But I thought, I mean, they added impact fees, which I know is George's favorite.
They added?
But, maybe, but, you know, does that all, when we do this resolution, does it all kind of go in one lump sum here, you know, when we ask permission, or do we have to say, yes, we want this one, that one, that one, or, yeah, I mean, I,
well,
it's kind of,
I mean,
lump them all together.
You can, you could pull out any of the three, actually, you know, if you didn't want to do impact fees, or you didn't want the enabling legislation for impact fees, or tax incremental financing, or special development, any of the three, you can pull out of there.
Well, I think the conversation was, we get the ability to do it. We don't have to do them.
No specifics, right?
We just don't have to go back and ask, so.
We will introduce, we'll have an ordinance for each one individually, correct?
Yes. Now, to implement an impact fee, you would have to, you know, we would charge the fee. It would probably be done each budget year.
But that won't be done with the other two ordinances. It'll be, each one will be done individually, and we could, if you don't like impact fees, you vote no on them at the ordinance time.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me ask Mr. Griffin a question. We already have the ability, in essence, to charge impact fees in the sewer districts. What type of impact fees are being referenced here?
I'm not sure. It's apparently it's not impact fees solely related to special development districts or tax increment financing. It's impact fees separate from that.
And I guess I'm asking.
I came to the presentation, but I had to leave before the gentleman, Mr. Guthorn, I think, he spoke about impact fees, so you all might have a better sense of that than I would. But I understand it. It's not related.
I guess I've been under the assumption, since we are, in essence, charging impact fees for sewer districts, that we already had that authority. But if we don't have that authority.
Only just for sewer. Right. We have an ordinance for just our sewer districts. If
sewer.
That's it. It's just solely for that.
So what other impact fees could possibly be involved?
Well, wait a minute. My understanding.
Creating state legislation to authorize you to charge.
Right.
You would have to go beyond that and then adopt a county ordinance to create the impact fee. It doesn't obligate you to take that second step.
Understood. And I believe impact fees are money assessed for a specific use. And I'm trying to understand
all this stuff
what specific use is it for?
I know Mr. Cole brought it up about trying to include that in the discussion. It could be required for certain county services if you wanted to, like libraries or paramedics.
Let me explain myself a minute. When I heard the conversation going towards all this problem with defraying the infrastructure cost to developers,
right?
Well, you're talking about the first one, the special tax district, development tax district, was for all these DelDOT improvements.
Right.
So we're creating a tax district for DelDOT. So I don't know why we couldn't do the same thing. If you're trying to get money to help with these infrastructure improvements, there's various ways to do it. And I think my concern was we may be leaving out another option, which is impact fees, where you don't need bond counsel and all this special administrator that's going to look after things. And the lawyers seem to like the ones that they were making money on.
Impact fees.
But when it came to impact fees, we don't need lawyers. We don't need that special thing. We could come up with a menu of X amount of dollars for every house being built would go to DelDOT, X amount of dollars could go for libraries. I mean, we could do anything we want, but to leave that out of the equation was just short-sighted, because other than that, you just need lawyers to do all this stuff, and they're making all the money.
I'm not arguing the merits. I'm just trying to understand what that money would go to, and you answered it.
Just like any of these other things.
And libraries. There are two options.
No, I said roads
and libraries.
Okay, let me clarify this, somebody. The special development tax districts were to get money for what?
Infrastructure.
What kind of infrastructure?
Anything that's needed.
Well, DelDOT.
The two examples that were given were the Plantation Lakes development in Millsboro and Heritage Shores in Bridgeport.
Or
infrastructure of the entire development, both on and off-site improvements.
Okay. Sound to me like a lot of DelDOT stuff. So don't you're all trying to avoid saying DelDOT improvements.
That's what brought
it all up. So I'm saying,
because they're held hostage by DelDOT to make those improvements.
The impact fee system does the same thing. So I'm just saying, and I think Dale agreed. He said, let's ask for the enabling legislation to do all three, because we may end up finding that one may work better than another.
I know when House Bill, I think it was 119 or 118, came in that talked about impact fees, the majority of the council chose not to support it, which was an impact fee, which was going to be charged on our building permits, that we chose not to support it in the House this last year.
But as he said, the problem with impact fees is we have to pay for it up front, and then we recover that money as those building permits are taken out.
Right.
With the tax district process, a bond is floated, the developer and the residents are responsible, and the county doesn't have to foot the bill up front.
I don't know what you just said. The impact fee says what now? How does an impact fee work?
We foot the bill up front, and we collect. Yes, we do. We said it last week.
Who did?
The gentleman that was speaking.
Here.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to argue. I think this consensus was last week that we would introduce the ability to do all three. If I'm wrong, correct me.
That's exactly.
Thank you. That's all I'd like to see you follow through from one week to the next.
I agreed with you, Mr. Cole, to ask for the enabling legislation, but I tell you up front, I don't support impact.
I didn't ask you to support or did not. Right.
I just don't want you to get too excited about it.
I am not. No, Dale, Mr. Dukes. It sounds to me like a couple of you councilmen are caving in already for some reason on special impact fees.
You understand.
Just because they've been lobbied for by the lawyers to do and the bond council to do the other, because that's where they make all the money. Impact fees are used primarily by most of this country.
The money coming out of TIF, though, does not cost the county, and we're not held liable for it.
Neither does impact fees, sir.
Yes, it does.
No, it
does. All right. Do you want to?
I heard what he wanted to hear last week.
That's all right.
Do you want to ask for enabling legislation for all three?
Do we have to read the resolution? You have to read the resolution and make a motion and pass it, or do we?
Yes.
They typically just read the title, but it's a resolution authorizing the administration to move forward with preparing legislation with respect to additional impact fees, special development district financing, and tax increment financing.
In motion, right?
That's the resolution that could either be moved or not.
We're leaving all three in?
Make a motion, we adopt that resolution.
Second.
I have a motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mr. Rogers, to adopt the resolution titled just read by Mr. Griffin. Any questions on the motion? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. That was easy.
Well, you make it hard on yourselves. You just got to go from one week to the next.
If you knew what you were talking about, Mr. Cole, it wouldn't
be. We agree with you, Mr. Cole. It's unanimous. Let's go.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Baker.
Okay, the next item we have is a, for your consideration, is a recommendation for state legislation to clarify and enhance the county's ability to establish overlay zoning districts within our overlay zoning within current zoning districts. I'm handing out a proposed legislation which would provide the county authority in this regard. The legislation has been reviewed by Mr. Lank and Mr. Griffin, and they are in concurrence, basically reflects current zoning practice of the county. It is a result of the recent lawsuits in Kent County. And if you are in concurrence, and Mr. Godwin and myself would work to try to have the legislation approved, work with the General Assembly to try to get it introduced and approved if you are in concurrence. As far as it is legislation that affects all three counties, but if you go to the third page of this, it says in section 3A, county government may provide the territory of Sussex, or may divide the territory of Sussex County into districts or zones of such number, shape, or area as it may determine, and within such districts or zones may regulate the erection, construction, reconstruction, alteration, uses of buildings and structures, and uses of the land. The next part B says the regulations shall be uniform for each class or kind of buildings throughout the district or zone, except that additional classifications may be made within any district to regulate, restrict, or prohibit structures, lot sizes, etc. In addition to those otherwise applicable to the underlying district or zone through the enactment of overlay districts or overlay zones. And the county government shall provide for the manner in which regulations shall be enforced. So it doesn't really change what we're doing now, but it gives us, maybe Mr. Griffin would like to address it, gives us And why are we doing it? Legal authority.
Well, we're doing it for a reason. There was a case, maybe a year, a little more ago, in Kent County called the Farmers for Fairness. They attacked an act of the Kent County Levy Court that established a fairly large overlay zone. It was basically the land between Route 1 and Route 9.
Putting 9 in the bay?
9 in the bay.
That's it.
But the state legislation that gives the three counties the opportunity and the authority to engage in zoning says specifically that the county shall divide, each county government shall divide the county into districts. It makes no mention of overlay zones or overlay districts. And of course, overlay zones are something that came into being with things like the residential plan community overlay. But the state legislation was never amended to specifically expand the ability of the county to create districts plus overlay zones or districts. So that case in the Court of Chancery ruled that since Kent County didn't have the authority to create an overlay zone, it was stricken down. This is corrective legislation that would amend the state law in respect to the authority of the three counties to give them the additional statutory authority to create overlay zones and districts.
And who sponsored this? Where did this come from?
It hasn't been sponsored.
It was actually written by Scott Shannon, he's an attorney with a firm in Wilmington. He was on the losing side of that case.
He worked for Kent County?
No. Well, he did. And he also has handled a number of cases, his firm, for representing Sussex County. And they saw, obviously, that the chancellor pointed out this flaw in state law, or this hole where we don't have the authority to create overlay zones. And they drafted this to clear up that ambiguity.
This is in the same court case that was where the planning and zoning at the Kent County level wasn't involved, and they thought it like more of a technicality that the way they created those zones.
I don't think so. This just speaks. This would address the reason that on which that case was went against, the court ruled against Kent County, because they don't have state authority to create overlay zones, and we don't either, and neither does Newcastle. So they're trying to go back and give us that authority through this bill. It never got introduced in the last session, but it came up sort of in the final days of the legislative session. So I think
so it may not look like this is something that gets introduced.
That's true. And the thought is there's probably going to be a tri-county meeting of administrators to try to get behind this and push it early in the session.
So this wouldn't come up until in January. Could I have a week to take a look at it?
Well, we don't do anything on it.
Was there a meeting coming up regarding that?
They're looking for us to
next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Join in. Okay.
Next Tuesday we can put it
there's
on.
There's not, we don't need to adopt anything. I mean,
I think you are looking for a consensus of the council that we're supportive of the notion. And without reading it,
I think Mr. Baker wanted to try to be able to give the the group that he meets with, what is that group called?
Delaware Association of Counties.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have a meeting next Tuesday night.
Thursday night.
We have a meeting here Tuesday night, so we'd let you know Tuesday night. You can be out for Thursday night. Okay.
That's fine.
All right. On the agenda next week.
Okay.
Why don't we wait, Dale, after the tri-county meets, and after we have that conversation with the other counties, then talk about it again instead of talking about it prior.
All right.
Yeah, that's, I think it'd be better.
That's
after.
Fine with me.
No, I mean, doesn't it make sense to do it?
Well, I guess Mr. Baker needs to know.
But if that, I'm sorry.
Develop a consensus at the meeting.
Mr. Baker, Thursday. I'll share my opinion with you behind the scenes if that's the way Mr. Cole wants it.
You'll do that anyway.
So, all right, you want to put it on next Tuesday, or you want Mr. Baker to go?
No, I don't. I mean,
all right.
I think if the other two county administrators could be possibly up there, and some of the time we talk about legislation that could be introduced for the next year, they need to start working on it now, and they need to have a consensus instead of, you know, that's why
Newcastle
we get together.
Newcastle does support it, I know.
Okay.
But I...
Right. The agenda next Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay. They right. support this version, or do they? I mean, that's what we don't know. They do. Okay.
Newcastle does.
They,
I don't
they
know.
Tried. They tried to get it last year.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what I'm trying to find out where did it come from.
Administrator's report.
Only administrator's report. Attached is an invitation from Senator Tom Carper notifying the Sussex County Council of a meeting taking place on October 9th at 7 p.m. at Carlisle Fire Hall. At this meeting, the National Park Service will explain a special resource study and is requesting public comment. Senator Carper is requesting National Park Service consideration within Delaware as part of this study. And the next item, October 8th, Columbus Day. On October 8th, county offices will be closed in honor of Columbus Day. County offices will reopen at 8:30 a.m. on October 9th, and the county council will meet on October 9th at 6 p.m. Thank you.
Susan Webb.
If you remember, we had a referendum in the Angola area, and we passed the Angola Neck Sanitary Sewer District, so now I need to open up a new cash account for the Angola Neck Sanitary Sewer District. I just recently opened accounts about a month ago, so I refreshed my information, and I'd like to recommend giving this account to Citizens Bank. If there's not any questions, I have a motion to adopt the resolution.
Please read it.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the following resolution, authorizing the payment from funds of the Sussex County Council on deposit with the Citizens Bank, bearing the signatures of any two of Dale R. Dukes, President, Finley B. Jones, Jr., Vice President, or Susan M. Webb, Finance Director, and a signature may be a facsimile provided one live signature is on check or withdrawal.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by Mr. Phillips to adopt the resolution just read by Susan Webb. Any questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
Thank you.
Julie?
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This shouldn't take too long. As you're aware, we've done some repairs on the roof of this building because of the extreme leaking we've had on the third floor, and I think some of it's even seeped down here. Yeah. The first phase was some temporary patching of the rubber roofing. It's typically called rubber, but there's a formal EPDM is what it's called. And that was completed in the spring of this year. And the second phase of our temporary or intermediate repairs was the masonry repairs of the existing chimneys. There was a lot of mortar missing, and water was coming through holes in the copper caps on the chimneys. So that phase was just completed, and that was Project 0701. And just to give you, I won't keep you very long, but I just want to point out that our consultants did estimates for both of these phases of the work, and their estimate totaled $73,000. But the total work that we've just completed was $44,092. So we've saved a little bit of money on these repairs. The next step, which Russ will be bringing to you, I believe, next week, is the beginning of the design for the entire roof replacement. These masonry repairs were necessary to be done prior to that.
The entire roof?
Yes, it's, if you can see it, it's in really bad shape.
Slaky from
a lot of the rubber material is actually separated from our deck. And part of what we did last time around was to reattach it, because when the wind blew, it was actually flapping up in the air about 2.5 feet.
Is there any warranty on this roof?
If there is, I have not been able to find it. I wasn't involved in the construction of the building. We did find a lot of evidence of improper installation when
it was, who's a project manager here from the county?
Tony DiGiuseppe, but check on that, but my understanding
is it's only 11 years old, so there should be some kind of warranty on it.
I think we have contract or checked with the contractor in the past.
Who was it?
I was told that, I don't even know who it was, but
Laurel from Laurel.
Maintenance told me that company is no longer in existence. And
I don't know.
The general contractor, but the subcontractor.
That should have an effect on the warranty, though.
I can find out for you. I mean, I'll dig into it a little deeper.
I would think for 11 years, there should be something on it.
Mm-hmm. The repairs we did now were to the masonry. The chimneys, due to the high winds and rain that we get, I assume that was the major cause. A lot of the mortar had come out on the weather sides of our chimneys. We have, I think, 14 chimneys. 11 of them needed extreme repointing. And the caps, the way that the caps were installed, the copper caps on top, originally they had just drilled holes right through the copper, and that's where they installed the lightning rods and the lightning rod cables. So water would work its way right down through the chimney there. So we had that completely replaced, took the penetrations off the top, and so there were no penetrations now on the chimneys at all, and repointed the brick. So that's done now that we can come back and add new flashing around the bottom with the rubber.
How many of those chimneys do we use?
There's only one working chimney. It's over this building.
Rest fluff.
The rest are all decorative to match the architecture, I assume, for the as part of the town's requirements.
Until we remove those chimneys, you'll always have problems. But
I've gotten a lot of good reports on no water in people's offices.
So we have any kind of warranty now with this work?
A year.
Okay.
Yes. It was our typical.
You said Ross is coming in next week?
I know that he's trying to get it on the agenda. He was hoping to have it today. So I'm only here today as far as the masonry repairs, which is a really rather small part, and it's something that had to be done, and I see it as typical maintenance, actually. And it's something that you may want to do in another 10 years or so, do again. Our original contract was $31,380, and we did require them to do a little bit of extra work while they were here pertaining to the copper caps, which they summarized for materials, time and labor, and materials as $1,166.75. So it just raises my contract by 3.7%. If you're interested, I can tell you what we did. I did pass that exhibit down to you. It just was a little bit of extra work regarding the caps.
Nobody needs an explanation, do you? I mean, it's, pointing up concrete.
Well, it was the copper caps where we ended up. We came into a situation we didn't expect, and we had to do a little extra refastening and caulking.
Perfect. I understand. Do you have a motion?
Yes, I do. All right. Be it moved, based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department, that Sussex County Council grant substantial completion, effective September 11, 2007, to DNA Masonry Restoration Incorporated of Southampton, Pennsylvania, for Sussex County Project Number 0701, Masonry Repairs, Sussex County Administration Building Roof, and further that balancing change order number 1 be approved in the amount of $1,166.75, thereby increasing the contract amount from $31,380 to $32,546.75, and that final payment be made in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contract documents.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by Mr. Phillips, to approve Sussex County Project 07-01. Any questions on the motion? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
Public hearing, Mr. Griffin or Mr. Baker, who's handling it? Susie Webb?
I need to open the public hearing, and then we'll turn it over to Mrs. Webb for a presentation. This is a public hearing on the issue of whether council will issue an additional amount of general obligation bonds in respect to the Oak Orchard Sanitary Sewer District. We'll start the hearing with a presentation explaining the purpose of the request. And after the preliminaries and any questions are of councilmen are answered, we will open it up to public comment if there's any member of the public here who has an interest in the matter and wishes to be heard. If you are here and want to be heard regarding this, when the time is called for public comment, you would need to come down to the podium and first state your name and address before you make your statement. Thank you. Ms. Webb.
Thank you. On September 11th, the County Council meeting, there was an ordinance introduced, which the public hearing is today. This ordinance authorizes the issuance of $1,203,000 of general obligation bonds of Sussex County for the construction and equipping of the Oak Orchard Sanitary Sewer District and all necessary action in connection therewith. The purpose of these bonds is to finance a portion of the cost of the construction of the Oak Orchard Sanitary Sewer District. The bonds are backed by the county's full faith and credit, and it is expected that the debt service will be paid from the revenues of the Oak Orchard Sanitary Sewer District. The term of the bonds is not to exceed 40 years, and we have a current rate of 4.5%. If when we close the bonds, the rate is lower than this, then we will receive that rate. It is anticipated that the bonds will be sold to Rural Development. They're the last agency for the funding of this project. The bond issuance is within the legal debt limit of the county. Concerning the rates, the annual rates were approved in the 2008 budget and are as follows. The annual service charge is $224.48. These costs cover the operation and maintenance of the sewer district. They're the user fees. The annual assessment rate is $2.28 per front foot for transmission, $2.18 per front foot for distribution and collection. These are the fees that will pay back the bonds, the debt service on the bonds. This assessment rate is right now capped at 100 foot in the 2008 budget. The connection fee for homeowners hooking into the district is $3,000.88. There are approximately 919 EDUs in the district, and the district went online in March of 06. Any questions?
No, you've done a fine job.
Basically wrapping up the financing of Oak Orchard.
Is there anyone present who would like to be heard concerning this proposal? Let the record show that no one from the public asked to permission to speak or to be recognized. Do councilmen have any questions before we close the public hearing?
No.
Questions? Close it and read it.
Okay, there being no questions, we will close the public hearing. The title is an ordinance authorizing the issuance of up to an additional $1,203,000 of general obligation bonds of Sussex County for construction and equipping of the Oak Orchard Sanitary Sewer District and authorizing all necessary action in connection therewith.
So moved.
I have a motion, Mr. Rogers, second to Mr. Phillips. Title of the ordinance just read by Mr. Griffin and explained by Susan Webb. Any questions? Being none, Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
Thank
Mr. Lang? Thank you, Susan.
Mm-hmm.